Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight-figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, there's been a lot of talk about AI, but a lot of it's very high level. A lot of it is either promising the world, saying the world's going to end, saying nothing good is going to come of this. It's all a hype bubble. We're going to hope to try to avoid all of those things today because we're going to tell you our journey with working AI into e-commerce fuel, building, trying to build 2 years ago an entire custom AI bot, why we failed spectacularly, why we're doing it again from scratch 2 years later, and all the insights and learnings that we've learned along the way. And joining me to talk about this is our ex-ECF member who graduated to community manager, who then became our director of ops and pretty much is the man leading the charge on AI. As much as I would love to steal this role from him, he has much more skill and bandwidth and time to do it than I do, to work hard to keep my hands out of his pot. And then, of course, is Mr. Patrick Ryan. So, Patrick, welcome, sir.
Thank you. It's been a minute since I've been on this illustrious podcast.
I don't know about illustrious, but it has been a little while. But AI has been, before we get into all the nitty-gritty here, I'm very jealous of all the cool stuff you're getting to play with. It's such a cool, it's an amazing time, and watching the things that you're tinkering with and how they are actually translating into real tools that we can use to save us time and run the community better is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's definitely awesome. And no, you're definitely not taking over anytime soon.
Yeah, you're much better equipped to do it than I am. But let's talk about what we tried to do 2 years ago. Let's wind the clock back 6 months after ChatGPT came out. Give people a sense of what we tried to do and why you think we failed.
I think we were really too early to the game. I think we were too optimistic on what we thought was possible back then. And it might have been possible with a lot more time and a lot more money, but it just, you know, we'd wanted to build something that was our own personal kind of AI bot with all of our data. And it just wasn't there. I mean, we tried, and the responses and the data just weren't working.
Yeah. And for a little more context, what we were trying to build is almost like a custom trained chat bot on the information in the form. So you've got all these members who are talking about what's going on in their business, what's working, what's not. And that's the value of e-commerce fuel, our community. But one of the biggest, if not the biggest friction points, is trying to sort through all of the information, all of these first person reports and narratives and stories and lessons, and distill them down into the information you really need. It just takes a lot of time. And so our goal was to try to be able to take all that and create our own version of, you know, ChatGPT effectively that was trained on the data you knew was not biased for people you trusted, vetted people, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And we dropped, man, what was it? 25, almost 30K on trying to build this out. And how long did we spend on it? 5 months?
Yeah, it was like 3 or 4 months. And it was just so painfully slow. Like, it, even just compared to now, getting the data into embeddings, which are the vector chunks that AI uses to kind of analyze the data, it would take a week to kind of just update every time we wanted to change something. And it was moving so slow. And then when we tested it out, the chatbots just weren't smart enough back then to really do what we'd hoped they could do.
Yeah. And I remember we probably worked on it for at least 4 months, maybe more like 5 or 6. And we got to a point where we were a couple of weeks from getting ready to release it. We had the UI front built, and I think you and I had a meeting, we've had 2 or 3 very candid meetings across our career together. And this was one of them. And I think I just said, Patrick, like, I don't feel we should release this thing. I just don't think it's ready. And I think it's going to be more painful and hurtful than helpful. And it was the right call in retrospect, definitely the right call. But what do you think has changed? So that would have been the fall, kind of the summer and the fall of 2023, about 6 to 9 months after ChatGPT came out. Here we are, we're coming up on the third anniversary of ChatGPT coming out. We've got something similar to this kind of on the, hopefully, you know, going to have a working, we have a working prototype now. But what do you think has changed, and why has it gone so much better this time?
A few things, actually. And I was just thinking about this the other day at how much easier it has been since that process. That was a painful process. And we had good developers. I mean, I think they knew what they were doing, but the tools just weren't there. I mean, now, you know, back then we were kind of recreating everything from scratch because there weren't any of these massive database tools in place. The chatbots weren't quite there. So now, you know, we're using the Google ecosystem for this particular project. And it's just every tool you need is there. Every process has already been done. And it's just a matter of taking the data and getting it where you need it and where you want it to go. And the talent is much better. You know, these guys have been working on this for 5 years in this field, and they've just become so much better at what they do. So the combination of tech and talent has really made a huge difference.
Can you talk a little bit more? Google, for example, we're using Google's tech infrastructure, Gemini on the LLM side, but even more than that, they've got an entire kind of studio environment for all of this stuff. Can you give a little more detail on all the things that Google makes easier within their environment, what it's called?
Yeah, so it's Google Cloud's kind of core cloud system, and they have Gemini is kind of at the core of that. They have a whole bunch of tools in there that you can use for machine learning, for everything else. But this particular database that we're using, which is kind of a hybrid database between kind of a SQL database and a vector database, has made building it out so much easier than we'd originally thought. We'd planned on having a couple of databases that would have to sync together all the time to keep the data up to date. This just makes it so much easier to connect to keep things in sync. Gemini is built right in, so it's easy. We can build out apps right in there for chat interfaces. It's just been a really, and I hadn't thought of this at first. The developer we hired recommended it, said he was been working with Gemini and thought it was going to be the most intelligent model for what we wanted to do. And he's been right. It's been amazing so far.
Yeah, because in the past, when we did this first time, you had to have your LLM that you were using, right, standalone. Then you had to have a MySQL database, which is, we'll get into maybe in a minute, the difference between a traditional database and a vector database. That's two different databases. Then if you wanted to build kind of a front-end user interface, that's a separate app. And then you may need to use something else to like direct traffic. For example, like in the system that we have, when you send a query, there's an AI bot that kind of looks at it and almost is like a traffic router. Like, where are we going to send this? Where does this live? And that's another thing. So it sounds like the Google Cloud interface for AI takes what used to be our first run through three or four, maybe even five plus different tools and combines them into one.
Yeah, everything's kind of centralized. So we haven't had to go outside the Google ecosystem yet for anything. Everything's being built right in there. So it makes billing easier. It makes managing things easier. They're just designed to work together. So you don't have any friction points like you would with multiple systems. So it's been very seamless so far.
Yeah. And can you give people a sense, we're getting a little bit inside baseball here, but I think even if you're not doing the work, I think understanding the difference between a regular database and a vector database is important. But even more than that, I think it's just fascinating. Can you kind of describe to people what the difference is between how those work?
Sure. So in this case, we have data, say, you know, statistics or just raw data that we access with charts or graphs or whatever, that gets stored in a regular SQL database. Just you write an SQL query to go pull the data, pulls it out, does what you want with it. The vector database is where the embeddings are stored. And if you picture embeddings as chunks of text, so if we have 500,000 forum posts, a lot of those posts get split up into chunks that are then stored in this vector database, which the AI then uses to search for specific things when it wants to answer a question. So it's much more of a kind of a collection of information that's not in a structured format than a SQL database, which is very structured.
Yeah, because SQL database, it's here's the sales figures, here's all our members, here is, you know, how many times the Bruins lost last year in the hockey playoffs, right? Whatever it is. Sorry,
I'm tracking that.
And that works great when you have very discrete data. But when you're trying to answer the value of an LLM is that you can ask it very abstract questions or questions that are very nuanced and get good answers. And what I thought was fascinating, especially the first time we went through and did this, is the way that that works is you take all of the data set that you have and you put it in this database, but you don't just dump it into the database. You take every chunk, let's say a response that somebody writes about, you know, how to optimize Facebook ads. And you take that and then you can run that through a process on the Gemini side or the OpenAI side to embed it. And what it does is it more or less takes that data and creates and converts it into a mathematical or a numerical representation. So it's an array of, like, I don't know, 200 different things. And they've got some proprietary formula that converts that into numbers. And it's so when you ask a question, instead of it going through and trying to compare the text and search, that question that the user ultimately asks will get converted similarly into numbers. And then it's much faster to go through and compare the question in a numerical form to all of the data that you have in the database. And then when it finds something that it thinks is a good match, then it goes and pulls those 2, 3, 4, 5 segments in text form and brings them in and consolidates them to give you the answer. Anyway, that's something that it's just a way I thought about dealing with data that I think is, maybe it was around before AI, but it's certainly become more prevalent. It's such an interesting way to store data.
Yeah, and the vector kind of conversion, the embeddings conversion tool in Google is also built right in seamless. So you just take your data and filter it through and it puts it in the right format in the right place and it's all the same system. So far it's been, and the context window size on the Google's AI side is so much larger than a lot of the other ones that we've been able to do some really complex queries and they come back instantly. So it's been pretty amazing.
This is when we were talking about the limitations 2 years ago, one of the biggest ones we didn't mention was context window. I think we were working with like 8K context windows, or maybe I remember getting excited and all hot and bothered by a 16K context window. And what are we at now? Like 1 million tokens plus?
It's a million in Google. Yeah. So it's been like, we got to be careful that we don't write something that's too huge, because if we do want to convert to another LLM, we don't want it to break, but it's still giving us lots of room to play with.
Yeah. And when we've been designing this, you went with Gemini. Why did you pick, obviously the Google Cloud's like kind of a nice all-in-one playground and platform. Why did you pick Gemini, and are we locked into Gemini, or do we have the ability to go between different models? Because it's so funny. I feel like every 3 months, if not every week or two, one gets better than the other. And they're kind of developing their own nuances and strengths, just like any tools. But it is, for building something like this, we want to have the ability to tap into other LLMs if it's helpful.
We do. And that was one of the kind of requirements when we set this up, was that we wanted the flexibility, because the LLMs just seem to hopscotch over each other every day as far as which one's the most powerful. We went with Google in this case to start because the ecosystem kind of just worked well with it, but it's designed in a way that if somehow Google goes flat and, Meta is the next big thing, we can easily switch to their LLM as well.
Hey, Andrew here, and a quick aside to introduce you to Sam, the owner of ParkerBaby.com, where they sell baby products. Sam's a great guy, a family-focused entrepreneur, has 4 kids, and despite running a very meaningful business, carves out time to spend a ton of time with them. It's a very cool way he runs his life and business. And just a quick little snapshot about his experience with e-commerce Fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure store owners.
The events have just been huge value add to me personally and professionally, and certainly for our business, just being around like-minded people, growth-minded people who go through a lot of the same struggles that we do, and a lot of people who have been through the different phases of business that we are going through now, and kind of using that as an opportunity to get ideas from people who've been through all this.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. So I talk a little bit about what this tool is going to do, how it's going to help our members, how it's going to help our team, and kind of all baked into there too is how much it's going to replace what our team does versus facilitate what we do. Yeah, chat a little bit about that.
Yeah, so this is definitely not going to take over for Dana or myself or you. It's a tool to help us find things easier. I think half the time we spend looking for answers for a member. So for example, if a member wants to connect with another member that sells a certain type of product or lives in a certain place, that data lives in a few different places now, and it's just time consuming to go through and find that specific information. This is going to let us talk to our data and find the connections better, find the trends better, find ways to connect our members and help our members quicker and more efficiently, especially for Dana.
Yeah, if you think about our onboarding process, we'll have new members join. And one of the things that Dana will often do is do a deep dive on their biggest issue that they're facing, because we ask people what their challenges are when they come to the forum and join the community. And she'll go through a deep research dive on, oh, hey, you're really having a hard time finding a great 3PL. Well, let's find some options for you for whatever you need, just as an example. Very valuable, but insanely time consuming to sort through all the threads and all the people and everything. And I mean, that's what I think AI, there's a lot of things it can't do well, or you shouldn't rely on it to do well. But one thing it does a great job of is distilling information across a wide source of, you know, different places, and especially if you've got a lot of it. And so we always, this is something where, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, we primarily don't see this as like rolling this out, having it replaced. We're not going to do automated welcomes or, you know, have the bots just run free. We're a community, right? Like people are our core business and relationships. And I think it would be community, and I think it'd just be kind of suicidal to just let the bots take over, because that would kill what makes us special. But to have that tool on the back end for our team to be able to be more efficient while providing really in-depth answers and help for people, I think is what we're planning on using it for.
Yeah, it's just, there's what, 12, 13 years of data in there. And even the best search tool in the forum is not going to find certain nuances in there. Say, hey, there's a thread someone talked about a couple of years ago about, you know, a 3PL in Poland. Like finding that information can be super time consuming. And this will just, it'll make that so much easier. And I think between Dana and I and you, we've probably spent, you know, hundreds of hours looking for things in the forum. And this will just make that such an easier task.
You know, from a privacy perspective, one thing we're making sure is and this went into the selection of the platforms and the way we're interacting with the data and piping it over to databases, et cetera. But all the data that we're sending, we're making sure with the terms of service for any service we're using that the data isn't retained and that it's not used for training from a precautionary standpoint. So I think it's important to note. What, you know, when you think about AI, ECF Live is coming up. I think this is going to air right before ECF Live. We've got a couple great sessions on AI. And I think the obviously lots of hype, but there are probably the biggest plus is in helping automate kind of behind the scenes systems. That's where I've seen the biggest win for real businesses with AI. Talk a little bit, Patrick, and you've done an amazing job with this. Some of the things you have done, and we're kind of, the scope here is changing a little bit from this kind of the core brain of being helping us to be able to find information better and help our members to some of the other tools we have in our community. But talk a little bit about what you've been able to do with AI, especially AI programming tools like Cursor, to already improve the efficiency of our kind of behind the scenes community, because it's so awesome.
Yeah, it's been fun. You know, we've talked about, we did a think tank about this a while back, and there's a lot of our members who are playing around with vibe coding too, but it's been fun, is most fun I've had in a long time programming, because, you know, programming used to be a lot of build something, it didn't work, you know, go out to the web, see why it didn't work, fix the code, go back. And it never got quite where you wanted to, and you hire a developer and you never quite know where the project is going to go when you start. But this is like just having a sit down conversation with a developer all day long, or however long you want. And not that this will replace developers, because there's still a lot of problems with this. So it's not quite 100% there, but to sit down and be able to build something in an afternoon that you wanted to build is just so much fun. And in the first case, we wanted to build something that helped us manage our review directory. We get members submit reviews. There's reviews been in there for 10, 12, 13 years. Some of the companies are out of business. It's very hard for us to go through and maintain that on a regular basis. It's something we do, but it's super time consuming. So I thought, hey, we could use AI for this to build a tool that will do that. And so in about 2 days, I was able to put together a tool that scans our entire directory, tests the links, writes an AI summary on what the company does, makes sure everything's legitimate, and then it classifies it, says, hey, it should be in these categories. Here's what you have it in now. Maybe you should consider this. And it just lets you kind of maintain the database on a monthly database. You know, Cheryl goes in and checks it once a month. It suggests alternatives. We remove the dead links, reclassify things. It's been a huge time saver for us. So that was the first one I built. And I was like, hey, this is great. What else can we do? So we also have a lot of duplicate entries. So I attached another piece to that where it scans for, you know, two instances of revision legal. One's incorrectly set is a, you know, software vendor. So it lets us merge those two entries. So that's just been a great help for cleaning up the directories. And then, hey, why not build an AI summary for all those reviews for Klaviyo? So that took a couple hours tops to build that one, because it's pretty simple. So that, you know, in 3 days, we probably save 50, 60, 70 hours a year at least in just maintenance.
Yeah, because we were doing all of that manually or had some kind of, you know, crazy long SOP that we would have someone on our team doing. And this, you still use the tool, but I mean, how much faster do you think it's a 5 or a 10x improvement in terms of how fast it takes to organize the directory now?
Easily, there's, you know, 2,000-3,000 entries in there, and going through those manually, checking the link, checking the categories, it's not physically possible. It just takes too long. So this kind of gives you the summary and then gives you the tools to be able to edit it without having to go into each entry. So it's just, you know, Cheryl's like, thank you so much. You saved so much time. This is great. So, I mean, that's the beauty though, is saving team members time that they could be focusing on other things that are, you know, more member specific or more, you know, growing the community. It just, it's the kind of thing that AI is perfect for.
Talk a little bit about how we found the talent, because the person that we had, well, actually, before we go to that, we have a couple of developers working with us. One that we've had, who's helped us build out much of our platform and our software stack behind the scenes for the community. And he's been with us for 5, 6 plus years. I mean, a great working relationship. Talk a little bit about, obviously, with all of the AI programming, you've been doing this. That's traditionally in the realm of what he would do. Talk about why we still are excited and want to work with him and kind of how we manage that transition of rolling it. Because it's kind of sensitive, right? Like, it's like, oh, hey, our programmer, you know, we're going to be rolling out the AI bots, but don't worry, everything's fine. Yes. But it's like the meme with the guy, you know, the guy, the house burning down in the background, and the guy's like, everything's fine, nothing to worry about here. Yeah, talk a little bit about that, because that's sensitive and it's a hard conversation, but it's also because we still do want, and there's still a lot of value in having him as a part of our process.
Oh, definitely. I think this tool right now is not going to replace someone that's maintaining our servers and our security and our systems. You know, this thing goes off the rails easily. Like I broke the entire app 5 or 6 times because it just goes down a rabbit hole. And I think those of you who have played with Vibe Coding know that once you start going down there, it's very hard to go back. So you have to roll back things a lot. It's very hard for it to debug itself. So having Tim as our kind of fallback on checking things after they're built has been super helpful. And he hasn't found that many bugs, but the ones he did find, you know, were helpful. And we'd always want him to check things first before they go get rolled out because, you know, who knows? You know, I'm not a professional developer. I'm not going to pick up some of those things that he will. And just maintaining the systems and building the more complex projects, we're always going to need someone like that. That, yeah, I wouldn't trust AI to build. You know, if we're going to build something like the review directory from scratch, we're not going to use AI for that. It's going to be a developer for sure.
Yeah. The way I thought about it was we can still have him be the gatekeeper. He understands the system because he's built so much of it. He's intimately familiar with it. He can quality control the work that you and I do, especially you.
What are you saying, Andrew?
Just saying, when you get a Samuel Adams and, you know, you start coding, start 3 p.m. on a Friday, who knows what's going to come out on the coding. But it allows us to be able to take more, have more freedom and be able to build things faster, but still have a quality control check, you know?
Yeah. And just to try things out too. Like, I don't want to waste Tim's time trying an idea that's not going to work. So, you know, a couple hours of my time monkeying around with something and it doesn't work, it's no harm, no foul.
Now, this is on, so the tech stack we're using, you know, kind of traditional tech stack, and this is not super AI heavy. It's, you know, kind of a combination of, I'm not going to talk about our whole tech stack, although it wouldn't be that hard to find out just from a security standpoint, but more traditional. But the stuff that we just built with kind of what you and I call the brain, the ECF brain, that required a very different skill set. And we needed to hire someone who had a lot of AI expertise with thinking about databases and how they all tied in with organization, the LLMs, et cetera. So talk about how we found that AI person and kind of what the going rate is for someone like that.
Yeah, this was an interesting one because, as you can imagine, AI developers are hugely in demand right now. So it's not like you can just go out and find some guys that are just waiting for you to work with. And I'd asked a few people in the field too, if they had any recommendations. And they're like, look, you know, most of these guys are just learning it on the fly as everyone else is. It's moving so fast that there's not really an expert out there that knows everything all the time. So I started out just looking at freelancers and realized that probably wasn't going to be the way to go. Then TopTal, I took a look at TopTal, which is kind of a vetted, really high-end vetted version of kind of the freelance sites. So they have professionals that are, you know, highly tested out before they get put on the system. And what I realized after talking to a few people was that we really needed a database engineer more than anything, someone who understood how to get this data into a database, how to engineer that in a way that would work for us. They could also handle some of the architecture work, but really, we didn't need a full-time programmer, really. We needed someone who just knows data. So I interviewed a few different people. They all had kind of similar backgrounds, similar styles. But the third one I interviewed just knew exactly what we wanted to do. He had just done it for another company. Talking shop with him, you know, kind of I had a few test questions that I knew the answers to and was hoping they would too. And the first two were kind of not really familiar with what I was talking about. The third guy's like, oh yeah, this is how you do that. Here's how I did that before. And he turned out to be a super skilled database engineer with years of experience. And just, it's been a really seamless project so far because he understands everything.
But he understands databases, but he also understands databases in the context of AI data manipulation and storage, right?
Yeah. So his expertise is not only in the structure of the database, but getting the data into the database. So he understands the connectors, you know, the API systems, vector embeddings, like how this all ties together, setting up the cron jobs, which are how we keep the data in sync, you know, all of that. And the privacy and the security are all kind of in his wheelhouse. So it's been a really great relationship so far.
Some of the things, database engineer, but what are some of the other fields, like RAG, for example, as an acronym? Can you talk about, people may have come across that. And I kind of, even having done all of this, I have a rough idea of what that exactly means, but I'm not, you know, I'm at like 80% versus 100%. So can you talk about what that acronym stands for and any other acronyms or kind of skill sets that you were looking for specifically that other people might want to be able to know about?
Yeah, it's just someone who understands how the AI, it doesn't have to be a specific acronym that they understand as much as the kind of just system in general and how the LLM works with the database, how the LLM connects, how the LLM thinks, how the LLM needs to be routed to the right section of the database. So it's interesting, when we first started this project, we originally had a piece of the project that was going to be like a kind of an FAQ for the LLM that would be, they'd get routed there first to kind of understand where they needed to go in the system to find what they were looking for. And we found that Gemini was smart enough that it didn't need that at all. We just could bypass it. It just understood what we were asking and where it had to go to find that. And so that whole understanding of how the pieces work together is kind of the RAG piece. Like, it's just this conglomeration of information and connections that just a standard database engineer wouldn't understand. It has to be someone who's worked with LLMs and data before. So if you're looking for someone to build something like this, you know, data architect or data engineer or, you know, database engineer are kind of the acronyms or the titles you would use to look for someone.
And we found that our individual, and our plan is to hire him full-time. He's working for us full-time right now for you know, a number of months until we get this thing built, and then kind of have them hopefully stay on as to maintain and iterate on it. But roughly, I think we use TopTal, roughly paying $100 an hour for someone who is in Central Asia. We've been really happy with. So anything else to add there?
Yeah, the talent was amazing. I mean, even the two that didn't make the cut would have done a great job, I'm sure. Just they weren't quite as geared towards what we're doing versus a more of a traditional kind of bot. Ours is a little more complex than that.
Give us a preview too of a lot of what we just talked about is going to be kind of behind the scenes that our team can use to help connect members, help with information. But there is something that we're hoping to be able to roll out member facing as well. Give people a little preview about that.
Sure. So Discourse has a very robust AI system in place. You might have used it already in the forums, the AI summaries, and there's a semantic search that's AI powered. But they have this bot that we've been testing out on kind of our end that is just for searching the forum data, really. And it's gotten better over the last year. When we first used it, I think we had Claude 3.5. We've upgraded that to the newer versions, and it seems to be a much better result. So plan is to roll that out to members as well, so you can chat with the forum data. Hey, I'm looking for a post from 19 or 2022 about, you know, 3PLs. You'll be able to find it much easier than with regular search. You can also get some nuances on what the discussions are happening in the forum over the last couple months. So it's going to be a much easier way to interact with the data.
Yeah, search has always been one of the Achilles heels of our forums, is trying to find stuff. And man, the search has always been so bad. Sometimes you search stuff and it'll surface like four things from 2017 before the five things from this week. It's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, so hopefully that will solve the problem, or at least enhance the search function.
Patrick, anything else to add before we wrap this one up?
We are not going to just sit back and let the AI bots run the forum, we promise. As tempting as it might be.
Oh, that would, we could create a crisis management, you know, anytime there's like arguments or issues or moderation things, that's the kind of thing where I think you can't let AI do that because, I mean, that's the value that we bring, the vetting, all those kind of things. It would be suicidal, I think, to try to just let AI kind of run. And people would notice in about 24 hours that maybe not, maybe a week, it'd probably take a little longer. We're probably less important than we think, but I don't think it would bode well long-term.
It would not. But we will be, you know, the tools will help us do our jobs better for sure.
Yeah. And hopefully help connect members a lot more, the right people, and get the right answers, which is what we're here for. So Patrick, thank you, sir. Appreciate all your work on the AI front. And thanks for letting me dip my toes in occasionally into your wheelhouse here.
Yeah, once in a while.
Forging what matters. About 7 years ago, our family moved from Montana down to Tucson. And we moved for a bunch of reasons. Part of it was the winter was starting to pick away at our souls, my soul especially a little bit. We were looking for a change, kind of a little bit of a change of pace in life. And personally, I'd always lived in the same kind of like 300-400 mile radius area and just was itching for something a little different, seeing a change of scenery. And so we moved, spent the last 7 years there. We did a little bit of bouncing around. We'd often come back in Montana in the summer and visit, but made the decision this spring to move back to Montana full-time, have a home base here, put the kids in school, give them more stability, and have it be the permanent base going forward. And largely, we did it because we thought it'd be a great place. And Bozeman, Montana is an amazing place to raise kids. Our family is here. They're getting, a number of them, or parents are getting older, and it was the right call. It is the right call, and it feels good to be back. But I want to do two things today. The first thing is if you're thinking about making a move in your life, a physical move from one location to another, I don't know all the details. I don't know all the considerations. I could be completely ruining your life here, but I, knowing nothing else, would encourage you to do it. Going to a new place, a lot of times it gives you just this backdrop and environment for changing things up. You appreciate the new place more. You appreciate where you came from more. And worst case scenario, you can always move back. That's exactly what we did. You know, we spent 7 years in Tucson, moved back, but it was exactly what we needed for our family at that time in life. And both, I talked to Annie about this, and even though we moved back, we're so thankful that we spent those 7 years in Tucson. And the second thing I wanted to do in this section was just give a little bit of an ode and a shout out and a farewell and a tribute to Tucson, because it's a special city. I asked my kids, I said, kids, what were the top things that you miss about Tucson? As in no certain order, their answers were they loved the life, the hummingbirds, just the kind of the birds that would always come through because it's such a warm place, the interesting plants, the citrus trees. If you grew up in the north, a citrus tree like an orange tree, it's like magic witchcraft, but without the negative connotations. I remember the first time I picked a grapefruit off of a tree, it was unreal. And to have those in your yard is amazing. The other thing my kid mentioned, my 7-year-old son, was the forts. We let them have these forts in the backyard that are, you know, it just looked like dilapidated, run down, you know, bomb shelters. But the kids love them. We had them when we were kids, and they had them, and being outside so much was something they could do that with. Tucson's a cool city. There's murals everywhere. There's a really rich, dynamic, cool Latino culture that's very prominent in the city. And man, just such a I have such an appreciation for Latino culture, from kind of the focus on family and how important that is, just the work ethic, and there's a lot of things to admire there. Tucson's such an eclectic, character-filled place. You have a lot of neighborhoods that are just fascinating, really interesting architecture, kind of a Spanish vibe. The neighborhood we lived in, there was no HOA thank goodness, because the different ways and flourishes and little touches people would put on the houses, there was a lot of care people had for them, and they were all different. It was wonderful just to walk around there. The Sonoran Desert in Arizona is just, you think about the desert, you think about people crawling through sand hill after sand hill, just, you know, looking up at the parching sun, and it gets incredibly hot. But it's also such a rich place of life and diversity and greenery, especially depending on the year. Waking up and knowing with a 95% chance that it was going to be sunny outside and you can go be outside was pretty phenomenal. And the sunsets there, I'll put up Arizona sunsets against pretty much anywhere I've ever been in the world. The local scene there with restaurants and businesses was really interesting because Tucson is a lower cost of living city, and that causes, you know, there's some challenges that come with that, but it also creates a really great canvas for a lot of places to be able to try their own independent businesses, from coffee shops to restaurants. The number of independent, delicious restaurants in that town is impressive. The bikeability and the walkability and just the ability to live outside a lot of the year, most of the year, is pretty special. And then finally, I think the biggest thing is a sense of community. We met some of the most wonderful, kindest people in Tucson while we were there. From our neighborhood, where we got to know, there was a neighborhood crew that would just spontaneously get together. It'd be a Friday afternoon and 3-4 o'clock, someone would send out a text and 4 or 5 or 6 families would meet up at the park. That was kind of the central social hub of the neighborhood. I feel like something that's rarer these days, the ability, I mean, how many times, and I'm guilty of this too, like, hey, let's get together. Yeah, what are you doing in like 3.5 weeks from now? Oh, I can only do Tuesday at 4. The serendipity and spontaneity of getting together, there was space for that with a lot of people there, which was wonderful. I had a number of wonderful friends I got to meet, some in my neighborhood, which was wonderful. Just a couple blocks away, get to go with walks with friends in parks, bike rides, have a beer, have a coffee. 3 or 4 guy friends especially that were I will keep in touch with regularly. We had an amazing church in town. It was one of the reasons that we were excited to go to. And it was a church that wasn't dogmatic. It wasn't overly politicized. It tried to make space for people that normally didn't feel comfortable in church, which sometimes is really hard. And it was also a church that encouraged people to come even if they disagreed on things and to talk through those things, which incredibly difficult for leadership sometimes, but I think it's something our world needs more of, and I really appreciate that. Anyway, feel very good about our decision to move to Montana. It was the right decision for our family at the right time, but we'll really miss Tucson and miss Arizona and hope to be able to visit there and keep just a little bit of that special magic in our lives occasionally. And if you're thinking about making a move, I'd encourage you to do it. There's a lot to be gained, a lot to be appreciated. You can always come back, come home if you need to. If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.